Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad, and we will be joined shortly by my co-host here in just a second, Mr. Chuck Snow. And we have our special guest on with us, kind of our aficionado of insurance, and he's brought some help along with him as well this evening. So we'll get to those gentlemen here in short order. But first of all, without any further ado, we're going to jump into this week's information coming in from DAT, the Trend Lines report. And we're showing that the national average price of diesel fuel is kind of got that still, that creeping incrementalism going on, jumping up by 0.3 percentage points, showing a national average diesel price right now at $3.30 per gallon on average nationwide. Spot rate surge in the lead up to the July 4th celebration. So tight truckload capacity leads to record highs. What goes up must come down, however, and at some stage with the spot rates increasing, cresting in the 2021 halfway mark at all-time highs, the market is bracing itself for a possible post-July 4th crash in spot rates. Except for 2020, rates typically fall immediately after the Independence Day and summer vacation season begins in earnest. There are signs that drivers are coming back to the industry after 24,000 new transportation jobs were added in June, but capacity is still ever so tight. So let's take a look and take a deeper dive to see how each segment was performing over the previous week in the spot markets. Starting out with the dry van report, starting out in the northeastern sector of the United States, was showing a national average spot market rate of $2.29 per mile on average. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, were showing a healthy average of $2.77 per mile for dry vans. Moving up into the Midwest, was showing an average of $2.76 on the spot market. Dropping down to the south central region of the United States, was showing an average of $2.54. And coming out of the West Coast, leading the nation for dry vans, was showing an average spot market rate of $2.84. Shifting over to the skateboard or flatbed portion of the report for over the previous week, starting out in that same northeastern portion of the United States, was showing an average spot market rate for flatbeds at $2.87. Coming out of the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, was showing a healthy average, leading the nation at $3.47 per mile on average for flatbeds. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing an average spot market rate of $3.36 per mile. Dropping back down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average of $3.12 per mile. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average for flatbeds at $2.72 per mile. Changing gears, jumping over to the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report. Starting out up in that northeastern section, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.43. Coming down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing a healthy spot market average of $3 per mile. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average of $3.14 per mile. Moving now to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average of $2.98. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, leading the nation, we're showing a healthy spot market average for reefers at $3.40 per mile. That is getting it done, son. But with that being said, let me go and grab my co-host really quickly and bring him up on board with us. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
I cannot complain. I tell you what, I wish I was having some $3.40 per mile average rates coming up.
Well, you know what? This is interesting because I remember 47 years ago when I got into this, I remember this old guy saying to me, and this was based on, as an owner-operator, what you should get per mile He said, you've got to get per mile what a gallon of fuel costs. And in those days, a gallon of fuel was running about 68 cents. And he felt that if you were getting 68 cents a mile, and that was leased on with the company, you were doing well. You know, you could afford your truck. We haven't had these types of numbers ever. And now the trucks get better fuel mileage. It's kind of coming into fruition now, obviously not right across the board, but we're getting a little bit closer, I would think, of what it should be. And I don't know, and nobody really knows for sure whether this hot spot market is going to keep up or whether it's going to fizzle out, because, you know, nothing that's ever happened in history is happening right now. You know, this is all, we're in brand new territory, every one of us. You know, businesses that shouldn't have survived have gone forth and prospered, and ones that you would think would never, would never have anything happen to them have gone. So who knows? You know, we're just in such uncharted waters. Fasten your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen, because we're going for a ride and we don't know where we're going. It's the best thing I can tell you. It just, it's a great time to be in trucking right now. That's all I can say.
I agree. And I tell you what, it's a timely time to have our special guest on board with us as well, with the impending, there's another crackdown that's getting ready to happen. With the CVSA, the safe drive from July 11th to 17th. And it's a critical, I think it's a good time to have our guys on, because maybe now, especially with our audience being mainly owner-operators and one-truck guys, a small fleet owners, it's critical. Insurance rates, you know, making sure that you get good insurance rates, but how to combat and deal with if you get any type of citation coming out of, you know, when they have these crackdowns and stuff like that, is it you know, how much does that weigh into, and how much that may hurt or affect your ability to get really good rates on insurance. So with that being said, I guess we'll go ahead and welcome our guest in, Mr. Tommy Root. And let's get Tommy in here, and we'll bring his sidekick on, Joe, here in just a second. So, Tommy, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing good, Rocco and Chuck. Thank you for having me on again, and I appreciate that. And you're right about the insurance part of it and how they look at things. Joe's been underwriting insurance for 40-some-odd years, and he'll give us some insight about the minds of an underwriter. I'm not sure we want to go that way, Chuck, but, you know, that's a good start.
Well, I think we do. You know, there's a couple of issues here. Joe had sent out a newsletter today, which I received and I forwarded to Rico as well, regarding the drug testing and how many more positive pre-employment drug tests have, were performed, recently. And this is another thing that the trucking industry has to combat now, because marijuana especially is becoming legalized in so many states. And in Canada, it's just legal as heck. It's like buying a quart of milk or a dozen eggs, pretty much, except you have to be a certain, I think it's 18 or 21 to buy it. But you know, the more you make something available, the more it becomes available, the more people could abuse it. And, of course, if somebody was under the influence of marijuana, or even if they tested positive after a fatal crash, I shiver to think of the aftermath of that. So anybody that's operating trucks, you know, small fleets of even two or three or five trucks, that's a huge, huge concern. And I'd like to take this second to bring on Joe Huddlemeyer, who is the CEO and COO and sidekick of Tommy Rook. Joe, thank you so much for joining Rico and I on the Rates and Lanes podcast. It's great to have you on the show.
It's great to be here. And like Tommy, we appreciate you you having us on. Yeah, it's a tough situation, and you're right. As marijuana gets legalized more and more places, we're going to see more and more positive tests. And the federal government is still on the prohibited list, and it's still going to affect the drivers dramatically. And the difference between alcohol and marijuana is you can take a breathalyzer test after you've had a couple beers with dinner the night before, and then you're driving the following day, and you're not going to test positive. Marijuana stays in the system so long, they haven't developed the test yet, and somebody could have smoked marijuana a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks before they got tested, and it's still going to show up positive. And from an insurance underwriter standpoint, they're thinking, okay, whether the guy tested positive after the rec or not, you know that the plaintiff's attorney is going to bring it up in court that this gentleman tested positive 3 weeks before. They're not going to care when it was. He'll be painted as, you know, a drug addict.
Yeah, of course. Particularly, Chuck, I think you probably have in your handbook that you don't hire any drivers that failed a drug test. If you don't, that's typical in the industry, as you well know.
Of course. You know what? We don't hire drivers that fail the drug test, and we do random testing. And, you know, and we haven't – we've been very, very fortunate throughout the years. I'm not saying that it's never happened. It's happened about two or three times since drug testing came out over 20 years ago where somebody – we've had them fail a pre-employment, and we've had them fail the odd one daily – random, and it's immediate, you know, we've dismissed people immediately. That's just cut and dried because they've been owner operators in all the cases with random tests or random positive test results. I think that and I see this coming clear as day. I would bet any money that for the next election, the Democrats will pull legalization of marijuana out of their hat, just like the Liberals, who are their Canadian counterparts, did, and got. I think that was one of the reasons politically, you know, that they were successful in the last election, because they got people saying, you know what, they should legalize this stuff. We can't be throwing everybody in jail. Plus, people saying, I smoke it, or my husband smokes it, or my kid smokes it, or my mother smokes it, or all of the above, and they voted for him. You know, that was one of the things. And I am sure that if it's a close election between the Democrats and the Republicans, one of them, and I would assume just going by party line, but you never know, it will probably be the Democrats. And that's fine, but I think Joe alluded to something at the beginning of the conversation where he said lack of testing. I think if they could come back somehow with a new test so that you can test the level of sobriety on, I think that's the word, sobriety.
Impairment is the word.
Somebody. My understanding, I'm sorry, what did you say, Tom?
It's impairment, how impaired you are.
Impairment, okay, right. So the level of impairment now. My understanding from taking some courses many, many years ago as a company owner, when and you have to look at the history of drug testing, there was a train wreck, I think on Long Island, where two young guys on a locomotive were smoking pot and drinking beer, crashed into a commuter train, killed a bunch of people, a bunch of commuters. And the U.S. government had a drug testing policy written out 8 months after that. And as big as the United States is and as cumbersome as your government is, it can be very agile and nimble, and it can do things quite quickly when it sees a need. And that was done, it was done very well.
Chuck,
go ahead, Tom.
No, the same thing on the politics. Clarence Thomas, which has to be the most conservative judge on Supreme Court, came up last week and said he thought marijuana should be, I'm paraphrasing, he didn't see a problem with marijuana being legal. So I'm not sure it's a political situation as far as conservatives and liberals in that sense. I understand the trend of that part of it. But the key is that Joe just said, that you just said, how do you check impairment? And there's so many ways in marijuana can be grown and consumed. It's not like alcohol where there's a measurement of the strength of any smoke or brownie or whatever you do.
Right.
But it is a problem there. I thought it was interesting that very few marijuana failed on the for calls or random. Most of them were the pre-employment. And that gets back to maybe the first time in the business, and maybe we're attracting some younger people in the business that would tend to be 100%. That way. The one that really bothers me about this is that only about 11 or 12% has gone through the rehiring phase. They've gone to complete the rehiring situation, and that's a real concern. You know, return back to work, and then the SAP, where you have the substance abuse professional that signs off of it, because there is a system to come back. And that means that 50-some-odd percent, 50,000 drivers in the last 18 months have left the force, which compounds what we talked about, you and Rico talked about on the opening, the driver shortage. You know, this is and how you attract the new drivers with this. The one thing that also, as I also understand it, is that even, and you mentioned, if your partner smokes and you're in the same room, you have a tendency to test positive. So that's
I was just alluding to that one. My understanding was when, and I could be wrong, and if one of our listeners knows better than, you know, has some different information, just press one now. I'd love to know. But I remember, like, and this goes back pretty close to about 20 years ago when I was taking one of the courses I had to take, and they said that there was a tolerance for that reason, and the tolerance was based on UCLA Berkeley students that were locked in a room with marijuana being pumped into the room for 8 hours, and they weren't smoking it directly, and they measured the amount of THC in their system after that, and that was the tolerance, basically. So there is a tolerance, because they understand you could be at a dance or a football game, or you're fishing with your buddies, and somebody's going to start smoking pot. And there's a slight tolerance where maybe if you inhaled secondhand smoke that your wife is smoking or your husband or whatever, you could ingest it. So there is, allegedly, from what I remember, unless that was all wrong or it's outdated, some sort of a tolerance. But maybe we need to relook at this whole thing. You know, a lot has happened in 20 years. There's been a lot of research. You certainly don't want anybody driving an 18-wheeler that's impaired with any substance or lack of sleep, you know. And I'll tell you, as a former truck driver, I think the one thing we all did was didn't get our rest. And, you know, back in the bad days, we would go drive for 24 hours straight. That was nothing. And I remember seeing a special that on 60 Minutes or something, and it was saying they did a test between alcohol and sleep deprivation, and lack of sleep was more of an intoxicant than alcohol even. So, you know, these are all things that could, you know, they could play in the hands of a plaintiff bar.
Chuck, you're talking about Benny's now, right?
Well, yeah, the Benny's, and then, you know what, even there were guys that didn't even we all chewed them back in the day, but there were lots of us that didn't chew them all the time. You were up all day and drove all night. Bennies were really, and I will say this about the trucking industry. I think we've cleaned up our act a hell of a lot better than a lot of other industries. I think we've done an amazing job that we should applaud ourselves for doing and cleaning up, because I have to tell you, the trucking industry was loaded with drug abuse of various types years ago.
Not the heroin and those things, but the bennies and all that. One of my father's drivers says he had to quit because he was seeing them bouncing off the hood. But let me bring Joe in this thing. He's been doing this forever, part of it. This compounds the driver shortage in this area. Joe, Rico talked about the CSA scores there. Give him an insight. Why are a seasoned underwriter is using that as a measurement to who to insure? We get people on this show calling back, well, you know, the government, I don't want the government bothering me, these nitpicking and all this. What does it have to do with crashes and all that? But this happens all the time, and I hear this on the shows that I'm on, and Rico, you've heard it, and Chuck, you've heard it. Joe, explain from an underwriting viewpoint or from an insurance provider viewpoint, which you are the gatekeeper of, why that's so important.
Well, the bottom line is what the insurance company, what they're trying to do is to be able to defend the motor carrier in court. Should there be an accident and people buy insurance, so you're going to have an accident sometime somewhere. If you don't, you're very good and you're also very lucky. We know this. Like Tommy said, I've been underwriting trucking business for 40 years. And the biggest deterrent and the reason why the scores are so important is because plaintiff's attorneys are using them in court against our insurers. And it really doesn't matter whether the alert or the issues, you know, that are shown in the scores have any relation to the accident or not. Plaintiff's attorneys will take any negative that they can find and paint the trucker as an unsafe, trucker that doesn't care. And that's why the underwriter is using the scores. You know, when I first started underwriting, we had MBRs. You know, that was MBRs and loss runs. And for most truckers had multiple MBRs. So, you know, when you're underwriting risk, you're getting the good MBR. And, you know, and that's the way it was. But there is so much public information out there today that can be used. I mean, it's great for an underwriter to have information to make a good decision on pricing an account. But it's the negative is that same information is out there for anybody to see and for it to be used against our motor carriers.
Okay, that makes sense. And that makes total sense.
And I think people, one of the things, I'm sorry, Chuck, the other thing that added this is what the underwriters also look at is more aggressive things like mainly unsafe driving, speeding, falling too close, things like that on the top of the list. Just because of the nature of a truck being aggressive is one of the negative parts of it. There's one factor that if you have you done anybody talk to you about the tort reform that came out of Texas?
Hank has mentioned it, I believe, on the show.
Well, one of the cornerstones that Joe just mentioned, though, is that before you go to bring the safety history of the motor carrier up, you have to prove negligence on the part of the driver. This is why the event recorders are becoming essential, and that's law now. Florida and other states are copying that part of it. So the more the driver gets the facts get in the marketplace, and if the driver is proven not negligent, he did not or she did nothing wrong, then they can't go to and bring the safety event, the safety history of the motor carrier up. Then it's just dismissed as a Florida Supreme Court did. This gets back to what we talked about earlier with event recorders. I think you told me on the last time of the show that your insurance carrier has required you to install event recorders, even using the What system are you using, a drive cam or smart drive, Chuck?
Something like that, yeah. Tantera. They told us, you know, there was a, you know, there was a incentive plan for us from the insurance company. And I have to tell you, and I'm proud to say this, that we've been in profit sharing with the insurance company for the last few years. So we're getting a rebate from them every year. So our loss runs were non-existent or very low. And we're doing everything right. And they we work with the insurance company hand in hand. They're our partner. And I want the one thing I want to drive home to our listeners is, number one, never, ever, ever lie to your insurance company about anything. Because the second you do that, you have lost your credibility. And you don't have a lot of partners in this business that you really need the way you need your insurance company. So you have to, if your insurance contract states that that a driver has to have 2 years experience, don't hire people with 6 months experience without talking to your insurance company. And they sometimes will, on certain individuals, even though they've only got 6 months experience, they'll bend the rules sometimes because it'll make sense that, you know, maybe the person had some training in the military. Maybe they grew up on a farm. You never know what their background is. But let the insurance company make that decision. Don't make it yourselves. Because if you lose your insurance, you've lost your business.
Joe, tell them your rule that you can't hide any. You cannot hide anything today.
No, and it's funny because there's been so many cases that you get an application and it says one thing, and the underwriter not only is going to go to check out the SAFER score, but he's going to go on the insurer's website.
And, of course.
And you'd be amazed what you're going to find out in social media on some of our motor carriers, you know, and the stuff they put out there and pictures they have out there. And, you know, it's different now because everything is out there. One 100%. Of the things Tommy mentioned with respect to underwriters looking, you know, for aggressive driving as an issue and those type of things. But distracted driving is really at the top of the list now because we're seeing more accidents as a result of distracted driving, not only on the motor carrier's part, but also on the part of the other person involved in the wreck. You know, distracted driving is an issue.
Well, there are some states where it is not illegal to hold your phone and talk. I'm not talking about a large truck. I'm talking about an automobile.
Right.
And any time you see crazy driving, usually by a car, but sometimes by a truck. But you know what? 90% of it is usually by drivers of automobiles and pickup trucks, especially. There's a phone involved. Either
yep.
they're driving 40 miles an hour in the passing lane, and they're talking on the phone, or they're using, you know, they're all over the road, and there's a phone involved, and the trucks are the ones that, you know, we're big vehicles and we can't stop, to avoid something, you know, especially with a, you know, 45,000 pounds of freight on board.
It's like trying to stop a super tanker. It just doesn't happen. You can't stop on a dime.
It is. And you know, the trucking industry has done a lousy job educating the public as an industry. And that should be our first thing rather than, and it's nice that we get involved in things of feeding the hungry and disaster relief and every other thing. But these efforts should really,
if we're going to save lives, it should be about educating the public about how far, you know, that we can't see you when you're in our blind spot, that we, when you cut in front of us, we can't stop. When you don't signal, we don't know what you're doing. Things like that. And people get killed. People that, you know, and you see it all the time with people right in front of a truck, you know, at 100 or 60 miles an hour, 100 kilometers an hour, and they're right in front of the truck. They're 5 feet in front of the truck. There's two empty lanes beside them, and there's no reason for it. And they think, well, if the truck stops, you know, if the truck hits me, it's their fault. Yeah, maybe his fault, but you may be in a wheelchair for the rest of your life if you're lucky. You prove the point. You know, you're going to have lots of money, and that'll pay for the health care you're going to need for somebody to blow your nose and feed you.
But we're talking to truck drivers on the highway today, and they see it all the time. And I agree with you, Chuck, the training part of it. And hopefully we got a better image. That's one of the things we want to address at the conference this year, is the better image because of what the COVID and what happened, and the essential functions that the truckers brought to the marketplaces. We got to preach that. And that's another way that the world is changing as far as the as far as how we defend a motor carrier in a more favorable light. But the thing that you mentioned in this, when the insurance company puts their assets out and decides who to be partner with, and it's a partnership because they're trusting you as an insurer to do it right, to be there when a claim happens. That's their business. And so the more they know about you, the more comfortable they are making that decision. This is where the new wave is exactly what you have. They're not only getting that camera, they're getting your ELD information, are they not, Chuck, and the operation of the truck and hard brakes and things like this?
They will be. You know, that's all coming out. It's starting with the cameras.
Right.
But this is like, and for those people out there listening that are saying, well, when that happens, I'm out of this, you may as well get out of it now, because I see within the next 24 months, things will be hardwired. It's just like, you know, and you're going to need newer trucks. I, you know, and I've been a big fan of the older equipment because of its reliability. The problem with some of the older equipment, it's not going to be insurable in the next couple of years. The insurance, I already see our insurance company sniffing around, saying, how old are these trucks? And I see them, you know, and they know that we have to give them a list every year when we renew. And I can see them within the next couple of years saying, we don't want to insure any truck over 7 years old or 10 years old, however many years. They don't want to insure trucks from the 80s and 90s and year 2000. They're just not interested. And they've done, Joe, you can probably shed some light on this. I'd imagine their actuaries or whoever they use that crunch numbers, they look and say, well, where are all the wrecks happening? What year trucks are they? Is that how it works? Tell me.
You know,
well,
that
Chuck answer
exactly
that.
You know that that's exactly what they're doing. You know, data is king, and every bit of anything that happens with in relation to an accident is going to be analyzed and going to be documented. And as we see, you know, look at all the enhancements that cars have. You know, with if you go back, I mean, I go back, it's funny because when, and this, now we're going back, Chuck, 25, 30 years, when cars were getting the ABS systems, you know, where they could stop a whole lot quicker, and our insurance couldn't because we didn't have the ABS in the trucks. And now you look at lane deviation and everything that goes along with it, now protecting the cars. And if the trucks don't catch up, and it's something, and it's funny, but it's going to be brought up in court when somebody says to the driver or to the owner of the motor carrier, you know, was, you know, this technology would have prevented this person got getting hurt, and how much would that technology cost? And they'll say, well, the technology costs $500. And they'll say, well, is this man's life not worth $500? I mean, I can see it. I can hear it. And, you're right. I mean, the older trucks, they're going to, and it's funny now because used trucks are at a premium, and everybody's buying them because they need them. And you look at the shortage, you know, of the technology of the chips now in the new trucks, which is putting everything on back order, which is slowing down the newer, more technologically advanced trucks from getting out there. So it's going to be interesting. But what you're going to end up seeing is somebody with an old unit, if they can get insurance, is going to end up paying a whole lot more than somebody with a newer unit.
And also, if they're not willing, if they don't have all the current electronic log devices and will not give access to that to the insurance company, they're going to have a tough time getting insurance or having a stable program too, Chuck. That's the thing that we have a message. Just to follow up what you said, I visited with a truck dealership Tuesday of this week and talked about it. First thing you tell me, Chuck, the new truck's, he's a Peterbilt dealership, the largest one in the nation, $150,000 to $170,000. But the Bendix Boraz part of it is only adds about $1,500. And he's saying that most of the motor carriers, the trucks now are coming equipped with all that equipment on it, but you have an option to delete it. And a few truckers are deleting it, which doesn't make any sense at all. And I think, Joe, I have a visit with you after my visit with them, but that would be the dumbest thing to do because now it was on the truck and you took it off. That's even worse about not putting it on. I mean, that's just going to be a death hole.
100%. Now, I understand finance, like for the short-term gain, why they're deleting it. They're deleting it because they don't have to maintain it because it's deleted. The problem is it's going to bite them in the backside. And as Joe said, or you said at the beginning of the show, Tommy, crashes happen. And it's either because you're one hell of a driver or you've got one heck of a lot of good luck, one or the other, or both. But that certainly, when you have a large fleet, even, you know, and I'm up in Canada, so our definition of large fleet and yours are two different things, where here a large fleet's 100 trucks. You know, in the U.S., a large fleet is probably, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 trucks. But even, you know, these large Canadian fleets that have 100 trucks or 150 trucks, they're going to have crashes. And if they have deleted a safety device that could have saved a life or saved somebody from harm, they're going to get the book thrown at them. And any savings that they gained by disconnecting that equipment is going to be lost with how much they're going to have to pay a plaintiff if someone is injured or killed.
Exactly.
And
right.
that's coming from the insurance company. That's why the insurance company is going to run from the people who have done that or will do that. And that's the message that we have, is that we wish insurance was cheap like it used to be, quote unquote, whatever that means. But second is that it's we're reacting to the insurance industry reacting to the plaintiff's attorneys and what they're doing to us, using the information that Joe just mentioned that's available to everybody that we talked about here, and how it affects us in court. It's not, and we can't even say, insurance industry, government doesn't say it's going to predict a crash. They just talk about it being unsafe. And so the key to that is the ability to live within the regulations. And now what's happening is there's an overlayer of apps coming out, and Joe knows more about these apps than I do, where you can now track your driver's use, speeding, crashes, falling too close, and on a constant manner. And the insurance company now, there's ways now to even prove how well our drivers are doing and using for improving those drivers and educating the drivers and making them better on the road. And that's the kind of stuff that's going to, that in 3 or 4 years is going to be almost mandatory, Chuck. And that's what a lot of the older drivers are going to resist, but because it's there, the insurance industry is going to use it and insist upon it if you want a sound insurance program at a very favorable rate. And that's
well,
going to be the thing. They have to, right, because it's there.
No, well, you know what? Nobody wants a – I have a – my understanding in business is if I'm doing business with you, it has to be a win-win. If it's a win for me and a loss for you, it's not a good deal because you're not going to stay in it if it's a perpetual loss. You're going to be out of this deal. So it's not, that means I'm going to be looking for another partner. Let me ask you both a question here. Do you foresee in the not-too-distant future where the insurance companies themselves will almost have like an air traffic controllers room, and they'll be watching their insured like that?
I don't think there's any doubt it's going to happen. I mean, I think what they're going to end up, they'll end up getting data showing, like Tommy said, heartbreaking, you know, excessive speed, you know, following too. They're going to get all that data because it's being collected in the data recorders now, and it's going to be more available in the future. Yes, I can see if the insurance companies themselves aren't doing it, they'll be outsourcing it to a service that collects that data and gives them information in real time.
Well, it doesn't matter who's doing it. If the insurance company, whether they've got their own people or they third party it to another company that'll probably be in, somewhere else, maybe in India or whatever. But in real world time, it doesn't matter. But I see that because if I'm going to invest in something, because really insurance is a gamble. They're betting. The insurance company is betting on your ability. And if you're not a good bet, they're not going to place the bet. You're no different than a horse. And an insurance companies, I don't think, want to place bad bets. And unfortunately, more and more companies have gotten out of insuring large commercial vehicles because it's not a good bet. It's an awful business, and they'd rather insure something else. Now, I got to ask both of you guys something that I'm really curious. We hear about the new entrants into the trucking industry in record numbers. Where the heck are these new entrants getting insurance from?
You want me to start on this one, Tommy?
Please. You know how it feels, so go ahead. You can express it better than me.
it's really tough. I'll be honest with you. Right now, you can count on less than one hand the number of insurance company markets that are out there insuring new ventures, new operations. And really, they don't even take into account whether the guy's been driving for 10 years. If it's new authority, then they're going to consider it a new venture. We are starting to hear rumblings of a couple potential new markets coming out to insure new ventures. But just like anything else, when you get somebody new that comes out here, then, you know, they've got to build up credibility just like the new motor carrier's got to build up credibility with an insurance company. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. A lot of these guys are being put in the state-assigned risk. Progressive is writing an awful lot of them. But other than that, there's one or two truck specialty markets that if everything lines up and if you've got forward and rear-facing cameras and you've got, you know, extra safety equipment, then they'll consider it. But it's pretty rare, and you're going to pay a premium for it. You're going to pay maybe twice as much as somebody that's not a new venture.
And the other part of it, you got to be, if they're willing to share their electronic data information like we talked about earlier, they're more, there's two or three I know about, that's a key too. Even our progressive out of Cleveland is giving advertising a discount, even for new ventures, I understand, if they share the ALD data. So that gets back to, if you tell us more about you and we can keep track of you, then we're willing to gamble on you. If you're not, we won't do it. And so now they're doing it, you know, in the pricing standpoint and using that as a as an incentive to do it. And this is the point that that I understand the Privacy Act. I understand the older drivers. I've been doing this 50 years or 40 years, and nobody's had me do this before. But there, when there's more data out there, more people are going to use it, both plaintiff's attorneys and the defense attorneys in court, and the underwriters are going to use it just because it's there, Chuck, and that's the message that I we don't want to be bad. We don't want to be messengers of bad. Well, let me say that. Don't shoot the messenger for the message is what I say here. But
I think,
but that's the reality. I mean,
like 100%, and a blind eye gets stabbed too. You know, and I think that you've got to – it doesn't matter what happened 40 years ago. 40 years ago, we didn't have these plaintiff attorneys running roughshod over our industry, all over it, the way we do now. You know, 40 years ago, there was some respect for what we do. Today, there doesn't seem to be a lot in certain jurisdictions. So we've got to, if we want to be in this business, we've got to play the game. It has nothing to do with 40 years ago. It has to do with 2021 and 2022 and the future. And we just have to get with it. It's, the world isn't going to stand still for us because things are changing. And, you know, you mentioned Progressive, and I know of Great West, a great company. And I don't know anybody else in the U.S. Of substance that's insuring trucks. There's some people out there that I've heard of, but they're not what I've, and I don't know what the actual grading is, gentlemen, but you know, they're not A grade companies. I wouldn't recognize, you know, their credentials. You know, they're B and C grade companies. And I think that sometimes out of desperation, truckers will go out and they'll source cheap insurance that's not really insurance at all. Okay? And that's something that they have to,
Let me, I didn't want to interrupt. Let me question. There's nobody riding trucking insurance that's rated less than B-plus on any kind of level at all today. And those are rare. And those, the ones that we're aware of that rated B-plus by Best, are financially sound. They're handcuffing them mainly in the one case that we know a lot about because they are only riding trucks. Best thinks that's not a good thing. But most of the you're not going to get loads and you're not going to get coverage on that part of it. The problem that we have though, and this gets a little more sophisticated than we have time left. But what there is out there is not insurance companies, but now you have risk retention groups and some of these other funding mechanisms that are not sound.
Are you referring to captives?
No, risk retention groups are different than captives. Captives have some degree of control on captives, and captives have reinsurance in the state, and it's regulated by the state, and it's overseen by the state. Most of the small people you're talking about today are not big enough to get in a captive. There's just too much financial risk they're taking, and you take some risk. Risk retention groups are formed under the state, too, under various states, and therefore somebody manages it. And, Joe, you want to explain more than that? You know more
please.
About the risk retention group than I do. But I think that's where the danger is because a couple of those have gone down. And those are the only ones I know of, Chuck, that have left people stranded.
Well, you know, it's a risk retention group is just that. It's a group of like insurers. And you'll get a company, and occasionally they'll have a fronting company. They can file an estate. They can't write property, but they can write liability business in the risk retention group. Most of them will get formed in a state like Nevada, where it's easy to to get a license. And they'll start out, you know, saying they're going to write $2 million worth of business. Well, 12 months later, they've written $30 million worth of business, and they only have capital to pay losses for $2 or $3 million worth of business. And generally, they come into the marketplace, and there are good ones out there, but the ones that you see out there where the pricing is very competitive, especially for motor carriers with either, you know, tough loss history or tough scores, you know, and they come in and they've got a competitive price, but the chance of them being around to pay claims is probably pretty slim.
Sure. One claim would knock them right out of the...
We're not bad-mouthing risk retention groups, but they're not as regulated, and you have to look at them very carefully, and mainly right now, how long they've been in business, and watch their financial statement and the regulation reports. That's the ones you're talking about, Chuck. But nobody's writing primary auto insurance that has a financial problem from an admitted market standpoint, even not admitted. Joe, do you know of anybody, and we won't name them, but do you know of anybody that you would be concerned about from a financial standpoint?
No, but a couple of the newer entries that are coming out, they seem to be financially sound, but generally they're not going to get a best rating for a couple of years, which means that you don't know. The people that have been running trucking business for years and years, they're all solid. They're either B-plus or A-minus.
But even the ones that are coming out, and I don't know anybody writing it that's not A-rated this area, and they get a fronting company, which is ultimately responsible for paying the premium, even if that other company is not there to pay it. The fronting company is obligated to fulfill the contract, the insurance contract. And because I don't know of many shippers and brokers today that will accept a certificate of insurance from someone less than an A. Joe, we talk about certificates all the time. There might be a few out there, but I don't know of any. That's the linchpin to get to the ratings, Chuck.
Well, your smaller, you know what? Your smaller ma-and-pa broker that is, you know, it's a 2 or 3 person operation, and they're dealing in commodities. They will probably accept them. Because they don't really care, and if something happens, they're going to fold up their tent and open another one tomorrow. But if you're a larger entity, you cannot afford to. But I do understand where truckers get desperate, because I'm hearing rates of over $30,000 to insure a single truck.
For $1 million.
Yep.
And liability only, you know, is what I was making. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can see where somebody gets desperate, and then they're spending $30,000 a year, and they have a minor crash, and now the insurance company drops them, and I could see where they would, you know, out of desperation, they need something. How are they going to continue in business? And desperate people do desperate things. So if they can't get insurance, all of a sudden a risk retention group looks, you know, it looks attractive to them.
Yeah,
that's the sort of thing
does.
We want to talk about, you know, on this show, to warn people about things like that, because it's not insurance. How do they build themselves? Like, how do our listeners know if they go shopping? First of all, if they're going shopping for insurance, I strongly recommend, having bought insurance for trucks for, you know, well over 40 years, make sure you deal with a insurance broker that knows trucking. That is, like, do not go to an insurance broker where you get your house insurance and your car insurance and your boat or farm insurance. You want to go to a specialist in trucking, and I can't stress how important that is to our listeners. That's number one. But those that don't want to listen, and I know that there's some people that think it's a good idea to cut the broker out and go direct to a company like Progressive, who will deal with you directly. That could backfire very easily, but and Progressive is a, you know, they're certainly a large company, I presume they're a good company. They're probably A-rated, I am sure. But how do people know that they're dealing with a risk retention group? What do they call themselves?
Go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Tommy. You started.
No, I'm saying they have to divulge themselves in a risk retention group. They cannot call themselves an insurance company.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing is, the insured really has to ask the question, because you don't know how many times when there's a loss and the insured gets asked who's their insurance company, and instead of saying their insurance company, they say their agent, because that's who they have a contact. That's who their contact is. You know, that's my insurance company. But they're really not. And in many cases, when you look at somebody that's got a risk retention group, they're not asking the question, are you an insurance company? Or is this an insurance company? Is this, I mean, and actually they can actually go look it up. You know, the internet's a wonderful thing where you can Google it, put the name in, and it'll tell you whether it's insurance company or risk retention group or risk purchasing group or anything else. That's probably the best thing to do. Just go online and look it up.
Yeah.
Do a Google search.
You want to know who you're dealing with. If it looks like a real bargain, you better do your homework, you know, and that's where you, again, if you were dealing with a real insurance agent that understands truck insurance. And you know what? That gives, you know, the next thing I just want you to explain really quickly, Joe and Tommy, about the MCIEF, because it's a great organization, what you guys do.
Well, I started it to teach insurance agents about trucking, and we've done it for years. Joe's taken over last year ago, actually this month, to take it to the next level. But all we do is educate insurance people. Let me just say it simply. To get the TRS designation, you've got to stand and listen to me for 48 hours. If you do that, you go know something about insurance. I mean, trucking, Joe, what you think? Part of it here, know the needs. And we're there for nothing but education. And any of your members can access us by mcif.org. We get questions all the time from motor carriers and insurance agents about things like the thing we're talking about here. Just email us at that address and look at our website, or email Tommy, it's T-O-M-M-Y, or Joe, J-O-E, at MCIF. Just send us an email, and we are more than willing to call them, to talk to them about them. What, Joe, I spent an hour with somebody the other day explaining that, did I not, for that person up in Lakeland about the kind of things and what they were doing wrong.
Exactly.
And so do you have a listing on your website of all of the insurance brokers and agents in the United States that are members of or have taken the courses from MCIF?
On our website, no. But that's something that we're working on doing and getting out there. If somebody wanted a list, we could get them a list by state, by zip code, by county, any way they wanted. You know, it's from our standpoint, it's not like we want to recommend one over the other. But we can surely point truckers in the right direction and tell them who they should be talking to versus who they shouldn't be talking to.
Right. And are there some of your agents that specialize in, let's say, tankers or reefers or flatbeds? Are there specialists?
That's correct.
So if we have a listener that wants to start a flatbed business, MCIF could steer that individual in the right direction with an insurance company that knows all about the flatbed business.
Definitely.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, or the reefer business or whatever. No, that's great stuff. You know, and I think that's
good
really
deal,
handy.
Really.
I'm looking at the time has gotten away from us once again. Do you guys, you gave us all the information that, about the website and everything. Do you guys want to leave us with the phone number as well before we get out of here?
Joe? It's 800-741-4084. 800-741-4084.
Good deal. Chuck, you want to let the good people know how to get in contact with you, and we'll get ready to bring this baby into a close.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Rico. Yeah, if anybody wants me, please get a hold of me. My phone number is 800-388-4352. My extension is 203. If you want to send me an email, it's very easy. It's chuck@traffix.com. That's chuck@traffix.com. If you are going to send me an email, put your phone number down on the email. It's so much quicker for me to get back to you. So somebody sent me an email the other day from one of our listeners from North Carolina, and he's got an opportunity with a direct customer. And it was a well-written email. I had a lot of information. I would much prefer to have a phone number because I can find a minute during the day to call you back or in the evening, have a conversation, and it's much better than email sometimes. So don't hesitate to send me an email, but just include your phone number so I can call you back and we can discuss what your issue is.
All right. Well, thank you guys for taking time to come and join us this evening. Joe and Tommy, we definitely appreciate it. And for you guys out there listening, the listeners, whether you took time to download, whether you took a little minute to catch us live, we are always eternally grateful for you for your participation. God willing, we'll be back at you guys same time, same place next week. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy. God bless you and good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, everybody.
Catch you on the flip-flop.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.